නමෝ තස්ස භගවතු අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතු අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතු අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස සෝ අපරේණ සමයේන රූපාණං යේව සමුදයංච අත්ථගමංච අස්සාදනංච ආදීනවංච නිස්තරණංච යතා භූතං විදිත්වා රූපතන්නං පහාය රූප පරිලාහං පටි විනෝදෙත්වා විගත පිපාසෝ අජ්ජත්තං ූපසන්න චිත්තෝ විහෙරෙය්‍යාති ති Dear Dhamma friends, we were in a discussion, or rather in discourse, between the Buddha as well as the one Brahmana called Magandhya. Before seeing the Buddha himself, he accused the Buddha, telling that he is a destroyer of growth. He is Bunahu Samano Gotamo. He is not happy with the production or progress or production, growth, of course. And then it happened to directly met up with the Buddha, and he dealt to the face, yes, because I consider you as a destroyer of growth or person who do not like progress like. Because it was the case, it was the way it depicts in our script. Then it was a good starting point for the discussion. Then yesterday what we did was, we took the first episode of the discussion, then the Buddha asked, so when and where I restrain my eye from wandering mind and entertaining different shapes and the colors, and try to keep it somewhat restrained inwardly, is that what you are referring as the destroyer of growth? So he accepted. So we, as meditators, I tried in my talk, then as far as we have a primary object, as far as we are maximizing the mindfulness and try to keep the mind within the body or with the bodily posture or whatever it may be according to the four cardinal postures, we are not encouraging wandering mind, we are not encouraging seeing, hearing, tasting, touching and kind of thing. And that can be, that kind of a restraint can be criticized as a destroyer of growth, anti-progress or nihilistic. So that we try to understand and try to justify within our timetable and within our restraint, basically moral restraint and the concentration restraint. So accepting and knowing with that, today we are going to proceed further along the same discourse, namely the Magandhya Sutta in Majjhima Nikaya. And there, once Magandhya committed and he accepted, yes, this restraint of faculty is known as something nihilistic and not promoting progress, not destroy of the growth. So then the Buddha says, he is giving an example. Imagine a person who was with a lot of visual objects. Whenever he likes, he can go for any kind of visual objects, black and white, colored, 2D, 3D, whatever it may be, and he is having so much of access to the musics, Western, Eastern, the Northern Indian, Southern Indian, and all kind of thing. And he's having a lot of smells from the Arabic countries or Indian continent, and he's full with them. And he's having different tastes, and he can access different menus, and he's having a very good steward. And he's having a lot of beddings and seatings and cushions and kind of thing, and access to any kind of knowledge according to the present day situation. And some or the other, that particular person, knowing what are, how it is the beginning of the seeing or beginning of the appearance of the visual object and how it ceases to exist, and arising and passing away in the sense of the visual object. I am taking the visual object as the main thing. And then he see the delight of the desirable visual objects, and he say he understand danger of it, because it is fast changing, and to keep the desirable face, you had to pay for that. And then knowing the danger, he decide to renounce from them, abandon that kind of thing, not due to lack of it, not due to any kind of negative, but he has gone through. And knowing that kind of disadvantages and the negative side of the rupa, that may hear the visual objects, and then he manage some or the other not to chase behind this kind of visual objects, not to follow, that is rupa tannang pahaya. So we know at the household life, or in the city life, or in the capital cities, they are full of visual objects and advertisements, and very bright. And knowing that whenever someone is trying to do away with, if I am to give an example, you go to a forest, and you are abandoning the capital city or cities or suburbs or villages and go to a forest, there is no such visual objects. And because he knows how much it is costly and how much it is giving so much of sleepless nights, and then know he is having desire to again to go back to this Times Square, where you have all the kind of visuals, and he knows if you are looking at the video screen or magic screen before sleep, how much it is destroying your peaceful sleep. And that is called parilaha. Parilaha is like a feverish. And next day morning also, you get it, the hangover-like. So he, knowing that, he is not entertaining that parilaha, and get rid of that, and try to keep the mind within the body, or so to say, in sitting, try to keep the mind with the breath, or the rising and falling, or just sitting posture. And while you are simply pacing up and down, try to keep the mindfulness, attention, within the body, and the changing of the left leg to the right leg, and the lower part of your body dynamics. And when you are eating, when you are stretching arms, you are bending arms, looking forward, looking sideways, brushing, bathing, every time there may be a lot of other attractive or distractive things, but manage to keep the body, attention within the body. That's in the
if we are to call, if we are to take clues or quotation from other suttas, it says kaya anupassana, contemplate on the body, on body. And whenever such a endeavorance becomes successful, the mind, after a few days maybe, few hours, sometimes mind turn internal. Ajjattam vupasanno, chittam vire. He can understand at the beginning it was very difficult because even if you close your eyes, the images happening. Whenever you open your eyes in walking meditation, so much of impinging things can happen. And in night dreams happens. And fantasizing, daydreaming, daytime. So likewise, the visual objects are just bombarding. And it is, of course, difficult. But if you know the tactic, and that is the theme of this sutta. If you know the tactics, you have to just go through it and then understand, because so far you were fertilizing them, you were feeding them, promoting them, thinking I am a rich person, I can access this and that, my children can access this and that, I can afford so much of a big TV, and all the kind of thing. Now just by closing this, the stream will not stop. As if a fast accelerated vehicle, soon you apply the brakes, it won't listen. You have to do it in a systematic way to reduce the speed. Otherwise it won't ask, it won't, it will not be under control. Likewise, after a while, whenever you are to understand the, when the mind become introvert, that is what we call insight meditation, and you feel kind of a contentment, you feel kind of a happiness, you feel kind of a inalienable and unalloyed kind of a happiness. They are not coming with the eye and the visual objects. They are not happening due to the ear and the sounds. They are not happening due to the nose and the smell. They are not happening due to the tongue and the smell. They are not happening due to the bodily comfort and the body tactile sensation and the bodily contact. And they are not imaginary also. Rather, free of visual objects, free of sounds, free of talking, and free of smelling, tasting, touching. And when such a thing happen, do you think, now the Buddha is asking the Magandhya, are you still complaining that it's a kind of a destroyer of growth or destroying the progress? What do you think? Then the Magandhya says, I have nothing to say. To reiterate that, to make it more confirmed, the Buddha says, I was such a person. I had so much of princely amenities and facilities and everything provided, and I'm assured with the future kinghood, and some or the other I managed to renounce them, and I live now with the internally or inwardly happiness and inwardly contented and saturated kind of a mind. So therefore, if you have some comments, or if you have any criticism, if you have any kind of bad interpretation, I can give my life example, my life. And then imagine, if I am living like this and without attaining the final goal, if you are to die, according to the Buddhist way of thinking, says going to the Deva world. And when you go there, you have the divine visuals and divine sounds and divine smells, the taste and touch, and nothing to earn. And being there, you can look at the human realm. And you can see how much people are struggling, how much people are thinking and worried about the family, the future, and my job assurance, and all the kind of bills and kind of thing. So then the Buddha asks, will that heavenly beings have a desire to come to the human realm, having such a free facilities? Or the Buddha asks, if one person is having so much of skin problems, having rust, rashes, and he has no other way, he often, according to the traditional way, go close to a fireplace and warming it up, because it is oozing, it is itchy, and apply very harsh medicines. So there is no other way. So he has to go to the fireplace and start a fire and live close by, and that's the way early people used to do it. And imagine if that particular person, some or the other, got cured, will he again go to a fireplace and start start heating the skin? No. Will he go for scratching? No. Because he healed. So likewise, the term the Buddha used is, he will never compromise for the lowly happiness as far as he experienced a superior kind of happiness that is usually called in Buddhist jargon as the Niramisa Sukha, that means immaterial pleasure. So looking at the world at large, they are materialistic. They think so much of materiality is the richness. And they never get a peace. They will never get satisfied. They are ever chasing behind, because one has to satisfy one's own eye, ear, nose, tongue, body and the mind, and take care about the children, parents, and all the other things. So just like in the drama Sisyphus, and he is always pushing the rock up to the peak, and with all the effort the rock pushed up, there's no stable place on the mountain. So again it rolls back to the valley, and the Sisyphus is tirelessly again pushing the rock. At least that Sisyphus knew there's no stable place on the peak. We people, today people, today generation, and doing the same thing. So therefore, and on top of that, they have the majority idea, people, those who are meditating, those who are mindful, those who are with SMS, are backward people. They are not productive. They are against the growth. And they think that is why these countries cannot be improved, because they don't have that kind of a motivation. They are always and easily satiable and not chasing behind. So when I was working in the company, and it was a Norwegian one, and the managing director came and told, this is the situation, in the next 6 months' time, we have to go for this target, and ask me what are the plans. Then I told, we have only 40 acres of net house cultivation of foliage plants, but Sri Lanka is a complete green farm. Any plants you can buy outside. So we'll go for the purchasing plants from the outside and do enough quarantine, and we can send. And we achieved the target, and it was a great thing for me, as I am, it's my first job. And then the managing director, he was a chain smoker. I demanded him that he must stop smoking. And if you are going to smoke, do it outside the farm. So he compromised with me. And then, of course, he started chewing tobacco instead of pipe and smoking. And one trip after that, now he came and asked me to double the task. So I was so upset. So I asked the local director, I mean that we have achieved such a big task, but that foreigner, he is not happy. Soon he come and says, why can't we double? Then the local director, he told, that is the difference between you and them. They will never be happy. If we can explore further and further, insatiable way, they continue. So it, of course, that Mahagandhya is correct. That is a productivity. That is a way of producing. But if you is not easily satiable, unsatiable, so where is the end? So this is what we meditators and the rest of the our family members. Very difficult because they are the majority. They are for the followers of Mahagandhya. And they have enough examples to show whenever you are going and doing this kind of a retreat, full-time retreat, you are not producing anything. You are just depending on the people what is giving. So therefore, it is a wastage of time. And they, for the production, accelerated production, and keep on doing. And so, being that is the society at large, how the practitioner, how the mindful yogi should make up his or her mindset. For example, when we are sitting, we have idle, lot of things come into the as eyesight. And sounds are coming from the ear door, a lot of sounds, a lot of smells and tastes and the touch of the individual posture and the mind door. So whenever we have such a vast area of inputs, limitless, what is to be selected? Utterly no agenda. You select what is creating more desire, what is creating more lustfulness, what is you are selecting the most prominent, conspicuous object. And that is what we call the monkey mind. That is, whenever you are given with the big variety, big selection, you completely lost. And if you are taking time and consider what is benefited for you and not that difficult for you to select a reasonable one, fit into your character and your caliber and kind of thing, but mind as such, it never take a chance, it never take a second thought, it is just taken by the desire. And I read one book by the Malcolm Gladwell, and he says when a person is given so much of option, if he is not well disciplined, lost. That is called natural selection. But humankind, we have such a mind, we have such a brain, we can pause one thought moment and see so much of variety, maybe due to my productivity, maybe due to my good, good luck, so much available. Am I contemplative to select it? And considering that limited selection is a destroyer of production. It's a destroyer of, and it is to say, nihilistic And even though this theory is proven, how to teach? Because you are waiting, your senses are waiting to have the most conspicuous, most prominent object. And they are bombarding. Specifically when you go to a carnival, when you go to a supermarket, when you go to any party, that is the way it's happening. So whenever you are not disciplined, you don't know this game. And that is how our evolution took place. We are given with so much of options, and selection is completely ignorant. We have no any option. And if someone is preventing, you will definitely fight for your rights, telling that it is my duty, I must have so much of array, range. And knowing that you have no qualification, you have no selection criterion, but you select. And that decides. Chandamulaka sabbe dhamma. The Buddha says, whatever you select, decides the next moment. And when, amidst of so much of objects, impingements, what to select, I doubt. On the earth, whether one can effectively or successfully select one. So Buddha did this experiment for aeons of time, and he says you can't stop it. So therefore you have to do it with in a sequential way. So instead of all the eye, ear, nose, tongue, body and the mind, some or the other Buddha recommended the body tactile sensation is the middle part. And then he lived up to that. And asked us to do kaya anupassana, contemplation or mindfulness on the body at the starting point of the Satipatthana Sutta for foundation of mindfulness. There we can understand how much we are hating our body. Even though we know the body is the one, that is the diving board. You have to go there and put a somersault and jump. But how difficult to keep the body? That is why we are going for bodybuilding and cosmetics and many, many ways of adjusting it, make it beautiful. Because the present state is not happy. And if you go to a cancer hospital, if you go to a rehabilitation center of the drug addicts, if you go to accident ward, then you can say these people, they don't have even such a medium body itself. And once we got it, we never happy. That is the kind of hatred. That's a kind of a thing. And I personally believe that hatred is what we call knowledge. Searching, 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 searching. Experimenting, research. Everything is, present moment is no good. Present body is no good. This place is no good. So we are doing experimenting. The Buddha says they are anarya paryesana. That means they are ignoble kind of research they are doing. Because they don't know why they are searching. They're searching because here now I am is not the norm. It is not the starting point. They are waiting, the Sinhalese Buddhist, they are waiting the next Buddha to happen. And they are accumulating so much of merits in order to make the game easier. Just like getting rid of all the bad karmic forces like. Then the Buddha is asking in a sarcastic way, how much it was, what is the account balance, how much did you gain? No one knows. Merits all the same. So understand the here now I am is the pivotal point. Here now I am is the benchmark. And to bring up to that present moment, how difficult. That is why these meditation centers are, and the forests are, and the solitude places are, So how can we promote, how can we say our younger generation, what about going to a meditation center, what about going to a forest, what about sitting under the tree? No. But they are productive. They are always thinking about the seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting and kind of thing. That is why these meditation centers are full of all crocs. All fellows and male, female. I am not telling bad. But I say they partly miss the bus. And how can we relate it? How can we promote and how can we stimulate youngsters hopeless? Not utterly hopeless. We have a very big successful project like Satipatthana Mindful School and we are very, very successful. We are spreading among the old school children, but we are not going with the religious mood. We are selling only the mindfulness. We are selling only the bare attention because it is helpful for even the education and to understand each other. So when individual each of you consider what is the turning point for us to change from this seeing, hearing, tasting, touching to the coming and cross-legged and sitting and to advert the mind into the body posture, sitting. And I personally consider this is almost Nibbana. It's almost a kind of a relaxation, a kind of a emancipation. But of course, if you have the direct adverting of the mind, if you have direct avenuing of the mind, when you are sitting, where do you avenue your mind? Where do you advert your mind? Manasikara. So that itself is a great task. It is the main task, I would say, of the teacher. Because everyone come and sit with dreams, with conditioning, with the mind-made world. But there is no other way. So whenever you come and sit, not the visual objects, not the sounds direct, they are perception, visual perception, that mental images, mental sounds, smell, taste, touch, and the mind wandering and the pet issues. They are coming like floodgates open. And whenever you met up with that situation and you can you are considering it with household life, even you do not know, there is a perception within the direct seeing, hearing, tasting and touching. As far as at home, when you are seeing directly with the seeing, hearing, tasting, touching, you don't know when they are cut off, there is their shadow, their perception. That is why meditators are often irritated, because when you close your eyes, when you sit down, so much of bombarding. But lucky thing is they are not real, they are not seeing, hearing, tasting, touching, they are the perception. They are the shadow of the same thing, but they enough to kill you, enough to distort you and make you frustrated. And when someone under such a tsunami situation, under such a COVID situation, imagine one managed to be face to face with the breath, face to face with the rising and falling abdomen or your expansion, contraction of your body or sitting posture. That is the turning point I am talking about. And when such a thing happens, you have to understand, you have to forego, you have to sacrifice all the household life, whatever you earn. And not only that, whatever you had the imagination about them, perception about them. I mean, they are what the value added from the mind-made storytelling, fantasizing, and getting rid of all the rupa and rupa sanya, kama and kama sanya, come into a particular primary object is a turning point. But if you are not appreciating it, even a split second is a turning point. So instead of that split second, your report is full of distraction, full of this and that. Because you think that soon you come and sit, all the other thing must be get rid of. And you must be calm and serene and be in the present moment. As if the heavy vehicle, soon you apply brake, it has to be stand still. It never happens. So therefore the Buddha is presenting a gradual process. First thing is be aware you are not sitting. Sorry, you are not walking, you are not standing, you are not lying down. You are sitting. If you know that when you are sitting, it's such a great thing because at that moment there are no defilements. There are no desire for these crazy things. And your attention is gone and that very thought moment verifiable. It is not faith. It's more than. That verification communicable. That communication make others also positive thinkers. That's the best in the group sitting and the group interviews. Some people come and say, yes, at the beginning I have this much of distractions, but I never give up. And I, while observing, after a while, after paying for that, naturally mind is calming down. And very advanced yogis, I mean very skillful, mindful yogis, they say, even the mindset, even the stream of consciousness is completely agitated, the calm mind, the mindful mind is still there. I hear some sounds, I see some visual object, but still, if I look at the breath is calmed down. It is not agitated, always. And even the bombarding, lot of things and kind of distractions happen in walking, you can see walking happen in a very systematic way. So that is the way, towards the last part of the yesterday's talk I told, you can understand I am sitting, I know I am sitting. That's a pure theoretical maximum. And sometimes you know you are sitting, but distracting sound is there. A distracting thought, a chain of thoughts are there. And distracting pains are there. So being in the present moment, being in the face-to-face, the primary, you can see what is the distracting thing. Today one person reported that in walking, there are a lot of thoughts. But still, it is not distracting. So I just wanted to tell, it is good because you know it is not a pain. You know it is not a sound. You know it is a thought. It's such a sharpness. You understand your distraction. And that understanding was delimiting. And completely separation from the others. You are not with the primary object. You are not with the sound, not with the pain, but with the thought. And that writing, it's a technical writing. So likewise, you can understand all distractions are there. What you select as the distraction is your character trait. It's a directed disposition. And you are the one appointed as the distraction. Not that at that time pain is not available. Not that at that time the sounds are not available. Not that at that time walking is not available. They are always there. But you select and say, my problem is with thoughts. So accordingly, if you are reporting in a scientific way, you yourself can understand your character type. The person who is listening also can understand, come out with a suggestion to give a glimpse. If it's the thoughts, if thoughts are the main problem, it says the counting of the steps or counting of the breath is a formal way of tackling it. May not be 100% successful. Likewise, if we can detect while meditating what is the frequent visitor, gate crasher or distracting thing, and if you are if you are a direct and if you are honest enough to report it, you can have a dialogue, you can have a discussion upon that, and recommendation can happen. And third option is completely you will be carried away by your thoughts. Definitely you know I am lost. 5 minutes, 10 minutes sometimes. And that is there, two options. The breath is the what the Buddha suggested. That breath is the what you appointed as the benchmark. And the pivotal point. Now you know, verily, I am not there. I am with this, with the thought or pain or sound. And that very understanding and that very reporting is much skillful than you know and you are reporting on the primary object. Well, this is, in a way, an unavoidable situation. But you know you are completely carried away, taken away by this pain or thoughts or kind of thing. And the fourth option is while still you are in the prominent secondary object, you can occasionally look at your primary object. Okay, in this case, the walking. I am with thought, never mind. I can occasionally look at the walking. Amazing for some people, walking happened very smoothly. To walking to happen, your ego is not necessary. What is it happening? Your ego is fully engaged in thoughts. And likewise, a person, that is what the Buddha is depicting here, if a person can say, I am utterly inwardly, I am not entertained in the seeing objects, hearing and smelling and tasting and touching, and still, it may be too much, but anyway, I am telling, still, if the breath is calming down, if the walking is happening automatically like, so Magandhi has no comments on that. He says, now mind is inwardly, and you love yourself, you love your posture, you love that my mindfulness is intact, and I am not wishing, may my mind astray with the visual object, or smell, or taste, or sound, so kind of thing. Because you know how hard you to earn this equilibrium, like tightrope walking. And when it is happening, of course not at the beginning, it has to do in a sequential way, number of thought moments, you must be in the balance, you must be in the present moment, then you can understand that way of contentment is not depending on the eye or visual objects, not depending on the ear and the sounds, not depending on the nose and the smell, tongue and the taste, not dependent even on your primary object. Primary object also ceases to exist. Slowly tapering off, you are not worrying. That is because you know worry, main thing is not to worry. And then you can say, whether you are sitting or standing, you can't verify because you are completely aloof of the body posture. And the mind completely absorbed and go to the, it is totally mindful. And that is we call Niramisa Sukha. Not depending on the materiality and with that, compared to that, and you can see this productivity. Gross national productivity, gross national income, and individual income. All these are measurable, perishable, and they have their own disadvantage. But definitely they should have the basic needs, not the princely level. That is what we plan when we are planning a meditation center. We must have the food, shelter, and protection, and a certain amount of education, but that is not for the luxurious use. No, it's not for the usage for the sake of usage. And when it is happening, whenever mind becomes introvert, you get a kind of a thing. And unlucky enough, when we were young, that was not available, that even the literature was not available. Everyone was thinking this as a dream. Nowadays, meditation is not possible. No one needs to give instructions. No one meditating. Meditation is just a mystics. But lucky enough, for the last 40 years, I have kept my eyes open. So much of people, they say, with or without distraction, they can follow the calming down of the breath. They can follow the walking meditation happening automatic, autopiloting. And they can see they are brushing their teeth and they get additional mileage because they are mindful. And while eating, while walking, whatever you are doing, whenever you try to be mindful and very conducive condition that you have experienced in the sitting posture, not up to that level, quality level, but you can understand certain levels, certain graduation level, you can understand while you are doing day-to-day activities. And that is a must. Otherwise, specifically lay people, they have so much of responsibilities, task and multitasking. So at the beginning, you can't think about multitasking. You have to go to a center and develop the mindfulness for the sake of mindfulness with a single primary object. And it is naturally, as the time passes, naturally, they are inviting how to handle with all the other distractions. They are, I call distraction, but at the household we call production. We call the growth. We call that our ability, our richness to have all the kinds. But here it has become a distractions. And when you are developing such a thing, and of course, if the other fellow members also follow suit, then there's a momentum, like a group action. When the cyclists are doing marathon, they ride as a clusters. Then they are making an eddy current. Some birds, they do it. That's why we have group sittings. We have group interviews. And there are some people, they express themselves. They can have this kind of a peace, maybe split second. But it's great. And some people, with proper instructions, they can maintain that equilibrium for a certain amount of time. And then the whole, each and every cell in your body is being exercised. Not only the structural changes in your brain, the prefrontal lobes and the amygdala and the hippocampus and all the kind of thing. Then you will argue telling the brain is not the mind. But the Australian lady only knew whenever the mind is with that kind of a contented way, the telomerase enzyme is secreted at the RNA-DNA level. And they are responsible to not to increase the chromosome caps. So much so, it is helping you to rejuvenate and you can understand even the body is witnessing. And that, in American jargon, they say is good vibration. If you have that kind of a good vibration, that's also contagious like corona. If one person can have that and do that meditation for the sake of the fellow meditators, the all others can do because the like-minded people. So that cannot be, maybe that is unwanted centers I am inserting, that cannot be the majority of humankind. Never. Even the Buddha never expected. Though he was omniscient and the omniscient knowledge, he never expected everyone to do. But he did it, changing from this luxurious, well-to-do life. He understood something called this immaterial pleasure. And that is not a very strange thing for Magandhya. But their tradition also talk about. And they consider it's a very great achievement because that is the greatest for them. But the Buddha consider this as the diving board, one pivotal point. And when you come there, if I am to go a little further, those who have achieved it, they can see how much you like that kind of the calmness, emptiness, or no object of situation. And instead, some people feel lonely. They feel bored. They feel monotonous. They feel fearful. Even though they earn it, they ill-treat it. That is because of the teacher. So teacher must understand, as if you are earning the materialistic materialism and how much you desire them, that is natural. The government properties, government law and everything is protecting you. Your earned thing is yours. So therefore you can go with the court cases telling if someone is misappropriating. Exactly the way when someone is earning this immaterial pleasure. The two extremes. One, some people consider this as the Nibbana. Some people consider this is the emancipation. Others are running in the midnight telling they completely lost. No boundaries, no ego, I can't explain what it was, I never expected, then I start sweating, I start moving, and I start swirling, and all the kind of thing. So each and every person going through this is experiencing that in the bodily way, as well as in the mental way. So if you have a theory understanding, and if you follow the sequential way it is happening, you will be better off. Otherwise, that itself become a problem. So people say, when you are practicing, meditating, you go mad. So it is a very common complaint. Because that you have that kind of a loneliness, and that is what happened in the COVID. That is to say, the social distancing is in an agony. People do not know how to live alone because of this socialization. Of course, socialization is good, no problem. But whenever the time permits, and if you do not know how to be with myself, then this kind of immaterial pleasure itself can create an agony. So not only that you must meditate, you must listen, you must share with others, and you have to undergo so much of examples or mistakes, and still the incessant way, and you have to look forward. That's called regular practice. The simple secret is regular practice. And whenever such a thing happens, you give up and get frightened, definitely you develop phobia. In my life, I have met up with such yogis. Whenever such a thing happens, they have a phobia, they never sit. They are happy to do walking meditation. They are happy to do day-to-day activities because that walking, sitting meditation is going very deep, 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 deep. And it's like a nightmare. And some people, other way around. They say, Bhante, I had such a beautiful, frictionless and mind state, and I expected it, and it never comes. So is it wrong with my moral precepts? Am I correct or wrong in my mindfulness? So have I selected the wrong object? So they are entertaining doubts. Not that I am telling that you can go without that kind of off roads. Or everyone is going through. Therefore, you have to share it with. And the day you reach that kind of immaterial state and appreciation the same is completely two things. Because these subjects never taught in universities. never taught in classes. They think it is mystics. The science selected only tangible things. As René Descartes mentioned, the ergo cogito sum, and that part is to the church, and scientist is for the materialistic part. So lucky enough, we are in the Einstein age, and he found the equation E is equal to mc square. Energy and the mass have some relationships. So mass or gross object is the starting point. And whenever the mindfulness is progressing, slowly, slowly they become subtle and subtlest. Ultimately, you become a part and partial of the flux, part and partial of the energy field, and your identity lost. That's what I try to mention as the non-local situation. So Buddha is giving example. I was that, and now I have this kind of a alternative, radical answer for this materialistic gain. And then Magandhya says, I have nothing to say. Because their tradition also talk about this kind of thing. But we are in an age, we are in an era, whereby these things become somewhat, communicable. People are witnessing that, and not only Buddhist, and not only the people claim this is my knowledge and this is my religion and clan and kind of thing, but not necessarily. And whenever we started this Satipasala or mindful school, very, very young children, they explain it. I don't know, they don't know how to explain it. But if you know, you can understand they are trying, but not a single teacher can guide them. Because teachers are not aware of it. Of course, when the teacher was young, it would have been, but it has been utterly erased of this productive world, Magandhya world, and gross national production. They didn't even know the gross national happiness. We have to learn from the children or from the Bhutan. And that is what it happens. So today we came to the second stage, whereby as an alternative to the materialistic pleasure, there's another sphere, immaterial pleasure. It is not another place or another time. It's exactly the same. Some people can go and entertain it and again come back to the materialistic world. They I call the amphibians. They can live in the water as well as in the dry land. So those who know only the water, they never think about going to the dry land. Those who live in the dry land, they never think about that they can live in the water. But this amphibian situation is a very preliminary stage in our embryology. And later only human being became the living on the dry land. So we are going backward. I am giving an example, of course. Going backward, how to live material and immaterial pleasure. Lucky that we had some interview reports today. They were hinting, they were experiencing this. But don't think that is Nibbana. You have to understand that also must be replaced by another still subtle situation. As time permits, I wish to go further along that. So with that remark, I would like to sum up the day's talk. Thank you very much for listening, patient listening.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.